Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Heart of Sports with Jason Springer and Jeff Cohen, powered by ELEC 825. We are thrilled to join you on WWDB 860 AM and 97.5 HD2, part of the Beasley Media Group, ready to help you move into the weekend talking about all the news in the world of sports. What's up, Jeff?
I'm happy.
Yeah? Tell me.
Yeah.
Why?
Pitt looked good last night.
They did. Though your quarterback didn't do much. It was your defense.
He didn't need to.
No, it was your defense.
Kyle McCord, my favorite former Ohio State quarterback, decided that he was going to throw not one, not two, but three pick sixes.
Yeah, you never mind seeing him get beat up, do you?
If you watched him on the sidelines, that people kept coming up to him and telling him how great he was. And then the poor guy kept going back in and tossing another pick six.
They just wanted to make sure he could get it out there, I guess. How are you feeling about, I guess we'll start college football this week then. Since
wait, you're not even going to ask me the weekly question of whether or not I watched Thursday night football?
Did you watch the ref screw the pooch?
No, I saw the highlights. You know my boycott of it, but I did see the highlights this morning, and I don't understand something. Yes. So it's a clear face mask.
Yes.
Normally, they say that's not reviewable.
Yes.
However, was it not a scoring play? Was there not a safety?
I had the exact same thought.
So why I thought all scoring plays were reviewable.
That's what I thought. Now, are they only reviewable for like crossing the goal line or not? Not whether or not there's a penalty in the process?
It's a scoring play. Just as if there is a holding in the end zone. Is that not a safety?
Well, they wouldn't review a play and call holding after the fact. They would review it to see whether the hold was in the
end
zone. Why not? Because I don't think they review the...
It's a scoring play.
But I don't think
anything that results in a score of...
They don't review the
1, 2, 7, 6, whatever it is, points should be reviewable.
Okay, whether or not it should be and whether or not it is currently is a different story. I don't think currently they can review penalties after the fact. It's whether or not the score occurred.
But I think the rule is all scoring plays are reviewable.
For what?
For football.
Come on, counselor. For what? They're reviewable to see whether they scored, not whether the foul occurred in the process of scoring. They don't posthumously call a penalty. Now, whether or not they should, that's a different story.
I look at you right now, and I see you're proud of yourself because you think that you won that argument.
I did not win anything. No, it's not an argument.
No, because now I'm going to make it worse for you.
Oh, good. As we talk about Thursday night football.
Is the health and safety of the player supposed to be a paramount importance?
Again, I'm not talking about what should be, counselor.
No, I'm talking about what the rules are. No, Mr. Fence Center.
Yes, of course.
Is that not okay? So if you don't want to go with argument number one, argument number two is it should be reviewable because it's you could have a serious injury from a face mask.
So we're using different words here. You're using should, as in the rule should change to allow something. I'm using is, as in they are not allowed to do it currently. That is the rule is. Again, how are we doing here?
I'm still not sure you're right.
Really?
Because it is because I believe the wording of the rule is that all scoring plays are reviewable. It is a scoring play. Scoring play.
For what are they reviewable? To see if they are a scoring play. Correct? I know what you want it to be. Yeah, I can't believe we've spent almost 4 minutes on this right now.
If there was no face mask, there would be no score.
That's not true. If there was no face mask, it would have just been a tackle in the end zone or he would have thrown it away. But they don't review it for the penalty.
Then it wouldn't have been a score.
Look, you contact John Runyon. He's the one that does discipline.
Whether or not the penalty happens resulted in a score or not a score. And so your word if applies. So I don't know how you get out of that one. Just like Sam Darnold.
Can I be totally honest?
You're tired of this?
You lost me. I'm not even tired of it. You lost me. Like, I submit just because I can't follow your logic.
Oh, good. Okay. I won. We can move on.
So, okay. As long as you feel better about yourself.
Other people are going to be sitting there going, what the hell just happened?
I have no idea what the hell
just happened. We can go on because
I have no idea what the hell just happened either. I did want to ask you, since we're kind of, okay, we've bounced back and forth between pro and college. Do you want to go to, you raised a couple issues to me this week that I was not aware of in college football. The potential for Army-Navy chaos, I wanted to bring up. Army and Navy are undefeated, and they're both really good teams this year. But you found a loophole that means they could destroy a tradition. Tell me about it.
They're both in the AAC, right?
They are.
Okay. And if they have the two best records, could they not play each other in the AAC championship game?
And when would that game occur if that happened?
I believe that would happen the week before the Army-Navy game.
So we finally get them like really good.
As two people who have covered and revered
yes.
the Army-Navy game, as well as an entire country, I implore Army and Navy to keep winning, first of all, and then for the conference to say that instead of there being a conference championship, that if this happens, the conference championship should be the Army-Navy.
You are on
having them play twice doesn't make sense.
You are on pie in the sky ideas this morning. You want scoring plays reviewed for penalties, and you think that mm-hmm. this conference is going to give away their sponsorship money for a championship game on TV? Come on. That ain't happening. Your best chance is that Tulane beats one of them because, or that they lose because Tulane's 3-0 in the conference too right now.
Right.
So Army's 6-0 in the conference, Navy's 4-0 in the conference, and Tulane's 3-0 in the conference. But no, you said it to me, and it kind of got my attention because we've covered it, and we know how special that game is, and you really don't want to take away from that. So does it make it less special, or is it like revenge the week after if one team beats the other?
It makes it less special. It doesn't make it not special. It makes it less special. That this is something that the two academies and the that it's really the only thing game in town that weekend because it's after most of the conference championships.
Well, they'd still have that game. It would still be the only game in town that weekend.
It just would be different.
But wouldn't there be the chance for the team that lost the previous week to get back? I mean, at that point, if they're both undefeated, they're talking about the 12-team CFP playoff.
Damn.
So are there still stakes or have you just totally?
Yeah, yes, because it's the Army-Navy game. Of course there's stakes. But it to me, it just doesn't make sense to have it twice.
All right. Can you tell me something else that doesn't make sense? Has Penn State.
There's a better chance of that than anything that does make sense.
Has Penn State not learned public relations 101 yet still?
No, they never will.
Come on, man. Look.
They never will.
We've talked about this. I do crisis communications in my day job. Difficult times call for simple responses. That is all it is. So Penn State, a very serious situation. Two former Nittany Lions who were dismissed from the team earlier this season, at the start of the season. So it's not like they weren't a part of the team at some point. They were dismissed in August. They're facing multiple charges, including felony rape and aggravated assault without consent. And Penn State refused to answer questions from reporters on Wednesday, and when asked about the case, Franklin walked away from the microphone and had a communication staffer explain that a statement had already been released and there would be no further comment. Come on, Jeff.
That's leadership.
This is, look, separate from leadership. I get it. You can't talk. No problem.
No. You can talk.
No, you can talk.
You can't say anything of substance. As the attorney in the room, You don't have to sit there and say that anybody did it, but you can say this needs to go through the legal channels. However, I do want to say under no circumstances is that tolerable. And I'm not talking about the one or two players. I'm just telling you, if we were to find out that happened with anybody, that would not be acceptable. Period.
Let's leave it there. Let's take a pause and let's bring on our guest and then we'll come back. So we said we would change topics, but maybe we'll keep going because we've got a character coach, somebody who has handled things the right way, leading men through sports. Coach Gary Waters, thank you for always giving us a little bit of time. How you doing?
I'm doing fabulous. How are you guys doing?
We're living the dream. We get to talk to you on the radio. Sports going on. World Series about to start. College basketball season. We were talking for a second before you came on about how coaches handle controversial situations that mm-hmm. come up in sports. And we were talking about Penn State situation where there are allegations against former players. And we were saying that instead of answering the question simply as a coach and just saying it's a legal matter, I can't comment on right. moving forward or anything like that, Penn State decided to have their press person come out there. The coach walked away. It becomes a bigger story because of how they handled it. So Jeff and I were saying that we thought that it could have been handled differently. As a coach who has worked with other coaches and has also been put in positions where you're asked about things that you clearly can't comment on for lots of reasons, right, how do you advise coaches and how do you handle these situations that come up to not make them worse when you can't say much?
Yeah, and you kind of said it. You're not supposed to make comment, and you should be as brief as you possibly can. And the other thing you should do is you should have someone else that is a part of this process that you can put that on them and have them answer it. Because once you put it out in front and you start trying to do that, then they're going to ask you 1,000 questions.
All right. Well, the reason that we wanted to have you on to ask you questions.
1,000 is, of them.
Is not 1,000.
Not 1,000.
Close.
But we... Trust me, we have 1,000, and you always have the answers. is what's going on with college basketball and college sports in general? And we've talked to you so many times about this, and you've actually anticipated some of the things that were going to happen. Well, now what we have happening is some of the bigger coaches in the game are leaving, and the coaches, you know, we've had this with Jay Wright here, but most recently, it's another high-profile coach in Tony Bennett who left and made it clear that one of the reasons he left a week and a half before the season started, or a couple weeks before the season started, was simply because of what is going on with college basketball and the state of the game. Right. You know a lot of these coaches. You are part of that fraternity. What have you seen, and what do you think about the fact that Tony Bennett and these coaches are saying, This is just too much.
Right, right. Well, there were some examples before that that I even commented in one of my books about. And two of the people I talked about was Gary Williams, who said, hey, I just can't take the AAU system anymore. I'm ready to move on. And just, you know, it's not a fun time anymore. And the big one that I thought was Bobby Knight. When he left the game, he left it earlier than he should have. And we're talking about two of the greats, and they're not leaving because of, you know, that they're not doing well or they don't have it any longer. They're leaving because of the state of the game, as you has just mentioned. And the state of the game has gone in a different direction. Now, did we ever feel it would get to this point? I knew at one time that there was going to be a judge that was going to say, you got to give back what you've given, what you have taken for so long. And they only needed one to make that decision. And once he made that decision, I knew the doors would be open. Now the doors are so wide open that they can't bring them back in. And it's going to cost them a lot of money. Because what they're doing now is they're saying they not only pay the ones for today, they're paying the ones from yesterday, and they only paid a certain percentage of yesterday. Now the other percentage is saying, hey, what about ours? And it's going to continue on. And it's just at the beginning of the stages.
It's sort of, you know, chaos right now. The pace of change is so fast in this game. And Tony said, you know, I think I was equipped to do the job here the old way. That's right. Who I am. And, you know, you've got the old guard who grew up in the business of doing things a certain way that are being asked to change almost everything. Then you've got these new guard of coaches who kind of were born into this life of fundraising and collectives and free agency and the transfer right. portal and high school recruiting and international scouting. It's not new to them. It's kind of a way of life. So even for people who say this is what they get paid for, Can you talk about the challenges and impacts on the coaches and administrators as they try to get their arms around this all?
Oh, yeah, because not only did they try to get their arms around it, Jason, they didn't prepare for this. You know, they thought this would never change. They thought the guards would stay the same. And now it's here, and they can't reel it in, because what's happening is everyone's seeing this, and everyone's trying to get a piece of it. Think about it. The one group that's really, really excelling at this are the agents. They're going and getting the players and getting the families and everyone else and saying, let's get as much as we can get. And so it's not about your performance. It's not about getting an education anymore. And that's where I'm really concerned about. It's not about getting an education. Think about all the rules they've changed lately just in education. They take away the ACT, SAT, all these kind of things that they had in place for us to make sure we continued our education and be the best we could become. Now they're saying, well, you don't need that. Just go ahead and get this done. And now players are on a program or on a team that's saying it doesn't matter what happens on the floor or in the classroom, just what happens with you financially. That's pretty bad.
What do you do? I mean, you said that they didn't see it coming. We know you saw it coming. We know that other coaches saw it coming. We've talked to athletic directors like Ward Manuel from Michigan, who saw it coming.
Right.
How was nobody prepared if you all saw that it was coming?
Well, you know, we thought we were stronger than what was out there, and it really was. We're really not. I mean, the rules are the rules, and what actually occurred. See, they, you know, they saw it coming, but they didn't see how it was coming. That's where the case, I thought, was the problem. They didn't see how it was coming and how magnified it would become so shortly. See, this has just happened in a year. Think about this. All this has grown and developed in a year, and now it's out of hand. You know, the collective. They didn't even know what a word collective was. Now, all of a sudden, it's the biggest thing in the business.
Now you got collectives fighting with collectives to be the official collective.
And see, and once you put money into the game, the evil sources get involved, you know, and I don't want to name who the evil sources are. But once you let players have agents and things of that magnitude and you don't control it, everyone's out for to get as much as they can get. And that's what's happening to the whole sport now. You know, for instance, I'm on the NIT committee, and something happened during the committee, or not happened during the committee, but when we were selecting the teams, certain teams said we couldn't come, that they were at the top of our list, not because they didn't want to come, because players were just saying, hey, we're not going to play anymore, because until I get the money. So now the teams that we had thought about didn't have the type of players to compete in the tournament.
So you're not coaching, you're not dealing with this particular issue right now, but if you were there, what would you do if a player says to you, you know what, I'm done for the season? Or, you know, as we saw, and we don't know all the facts of what happened at UNLV, but you saw a player in the middle of his season.
Right.
Say, you know what, I'm not getting the money that I supposedly were promised. And by the way, I will use the word for the other word for collective is booster. And they just changed the word on us. But the dirty word was booster. And the fact is, you have now kids who have so many people in their ears. And yes, they are young adults. They do have to take responsibility, but they have all these people now in their ears telling them you can get more. And if you stop playing, you could, or threaten not to play, you can get more. And if you threaten to go somewhere else, you can get more.
Oh, yes.
And if you do go somewhere else, you can get more. And so nobody's saying to them, hey, by the way, if you stay for 4 years, you're going to get a college diploma, which is going to be worth more money for almost all of them, except for a tiny handful of people. And we see half the kids in the portal in any 1 year. Oh. So what do you do when you can't just say to the kid, go somewhere else, because then you're not going to have a roster. Look what happened to Michigan. Juwan Howard basically had nobody.
Right.
And Dusty May had to come in and basically go out into the portal and get a new team.
Well, and what's happening is you have to now adjust to what's happening. Think about what's happening at Colorado. They brought in over 50 guys, but now he embraced the process and say, I'm gonna bring in 50 guys, and the people that are working under me are gonna do the right selection. And now, if you're trying to create a team every year, that's really tough, especially in football. That's really, really tough. And my hat's off to him for what he's doing right now in a short time span because of he's able to have a little success. But it's if you look at the whole picture, you're not going to have much success doing that. Where I thought the biggest mistake happened, Jeff and Jason, is that they brought him out at the same time. You knew they were going to come. You knew they were going to hit. But they brought them out at the same time. They brought out the portal and they brought out the NIL at the same time. Now, not only do you say the NIL, they also brought out the collective to help the NIL. I mean, if you think what I'm telling you. So it's actually three things out there. And it should have just been one. They should have went took one, spent time on that, mean years, and completed it and made sure they have all the rules and regulations related to it. And then bring in the other and add it. And now, see, they're using one against another. And now you can't win that battle.
I'm curious about building a culture now as a coach and as a team.
Wait, wait, wait. You got a false word there, culture.
Well, in that, I mean, it used to be you have programs built on guys waiting their time, working in practice, waiting for the opportunity. Now they leave practice if they don't get enough run, and somebody's out there saying, come to my school and we'll put you a starter.
Right,
So,
right.
can you talk about the challenges as a coach, as a college, of building a team culture when you have all that outside noise and so many opportunities for people to just say, okay, I'm out?
Yeah, that's what I'm going to tell you, Jason. That is a key factor because when I coached, my whole goal was to keep everything inside house. And I think most coaches do that. And now all of what they do is on the outside and people are related to it. And I mean, it's not only on the outside from the coaching staff, it's on the outside from the parents, from every stage that you want to deal with. And so now they got to really, I don't want to say be transparent, but they have to say that we got to correct this by giving out information that we want to give out. Because if not, I mean, you're not going to win that battle because it's, the thing is so scary to me is that players are going to be players. You and I both know that. And the families are going to be families. However, the whole system has to be predicated around them to make sure that they're guarded. Now they're saying they're not guarded anymore. And we're going to allow whoever wants to come into this, come on in. They're saying we're putting our hands up instead of taking control of this thing and seeing they're going to have to do that pretty soon because, the money is going out of control, the transferring is going out of control, and now people are starting to struggle within the system. So they're going to have to do something soon.
Well, here's the part that I don't think anybody actually did anticipate was when we talked to coaches and athletic directors when the portal was just a baby, the idea was, or the knock on it was that players were going to, student athletes who weren't getting the immediate satisfaction of starting, instead of
That was the whole
competing
book.
for their jobs, they were just going to go somewhere else. But now what's happening is success is leading to you going somewhere else. So if, like, you coached at Cleveland State, if you had the scoring champ of your conference at Cleveland State as a freshman or a sophomore, guess what? He's not staying next year. He's going to look to see whether Virginia or UCLA or some other Alabama or some other big program has an NIL collective that's going to pay him a lot of money.
That's right.
And so now, as a coach, especially in basketball, you literally have to look for players that are okay to good, but don't become great because success could lead to destroying your culture just as much as not starting will lead to destroying your culture.
Jeff, you're hitting it right on the head. And it happened to me, to be exact. And people said, I got out of the business because of this. And it kind of helped. What occurred was they had the one rule, the fifth-year transfer rule. And see, people didn't understand it. And it had been out, the fifth-year transfer rule had been out many, many years. I mean, it's a past rule. But no one really used it. The only one used it was football. If they had a quarterback that never played, he may, in his fifth year, because he's been there a long time, could go to a smaller school, transfer, and be able to play immediately. Boy, they got a hold of it, and they realized that you can transfer immediately if you're going into your fifth year. But that wasn't what the rules said. The rules said they had to have your academic graduate program, all this stuff. They didn't follow that. They just said, we're going to transfer. But then the next step was other schools start communicating with the players. Now, they had their ways of doing it, you know, through AAU, through parents, through whatever, to say, hey, you can transfer. I ended up losing in my last 2 years, five of my top players. Two of them were all league players. And how did that happen? Because of the fifth-year rule. Now, that's not talking about the portal. See, when they seen that it was successful with the fifth-year rule, they went on to say, let's put in the portal. Let's get them to, you know, and I don't want to get into who said it and what happened. They're saying that if football and basketball can do it, I mean, if football and football and basketball aren't doing it, but all the minor sports are doing it, allowing you to transfer at any given time, why not let it happen? Why not open up the gate? And they did. And when they did that, it has caused a lot of confusion. And now you can't keep your players. You know, I had one coach tell me that he had a recruit come into his place and said, hey, you know, we want to come. We enjoy it. Now, this is a top recruit said, we want to come. But let me ask you a question. That's a mid-major school. If he does well in the first 2 years, can he get everything together to transfer? Now, he's in on his visit saying, I'm ready to transfer.
Nothing says commitment to the team like coming in the door saying, how do I get out the door? Yeah. I mean, it gets to, though, you know, we talk about this from the business side of the sport, the boosters and the transfers and the regulations. But, you know, one of the things that Tony Bennett said is he worries a lot about the mental health of student athletes as this comes down.
Ooh, that's the big part.
I'm curious about that, not just for, I mean, you got the mental health of you're changing teams and schools and making new friends. You've got to learn new teachers and subjects. There is so much that goes into this, along with the stress and pressure you have, not just of being a star athlete, but being compensated to be that star and people wanting things in return for it. Can you talk about some of the stressors now on student athletes, also on coaches in this era?
Well, I was going to say that, yes. The coaches are part of this as the players. You know, one of my coaches, to tell you, he called me and asked me, he was asking me to speak at something that he had going on. But then he said, you know, Coach, I just got to tell you, I'm really struggling during this time. I said, what is it? He said, well, you know, it's just so much stuff going on. I said, what do you mean? He says, Coach, I don't coach anymore. I said, no, you do. I watched you on TV. Your team's doing what? I said, no. I'm just a figurehead out there on the floor. I don't coach anymore because I'm spending most of my time, 80% of my time, finding out how much money I can get a player, how much I got to give to the parents, what kind of car I got to buy, get the guy set up to get. I mean, it's just so many things that they never, ever thought about. Now, I'm talking about Power Five schools back in the day. And so he's saying it's just got out of control. And he said he doesn't want to have any bit of it anymore. Now, he ended up going to another school, but he went to the right school that are handling it the right way. And that's the problem. It's not many of them handling it the right way.
Well, is the answer now to throw up our hands and say, yes, they're professional athletes and have contracts? Because at least if we acknowledge that they're employees and that they have contracts directly with the school, then the answer then is we can have periods of time that we can have them in contracts. Instead of you worrying literally in the middle of your season whether your star player is going to hold out or just go to another school because some booster at another school said, hey, I can get you more money next year.
Well, what you're saying is correct, Jeff. And I think they're moving in that direction. You know, when they took out the National Letter of Intent, they just took that out this year.
Right.
And the whole purpose is to develop a contract. Now we're going to put them in a contract, make a decision, how much money they get. That's number one. And number two, how long it's for. And now I don't know if they can go beyond a year because, you know, the courts get involved. I don't know what's happening there. But I do know that they're looking toward that. They're looking to get this under control in that particular area.
Well, as far as the courts being involved, anybody can contract with any other person who's an adult. So my point is that if we stop playing with collectives and we start having the schools pay the players directly.
Right, right.
Then it's permissible. Both sides have agreed that for 4 years, this is what you're going to do.
Do you really think the collectives are just going to go away at that point? Like, aren't we going to end up with players and collectives?
No, I don't think you can have both. I think because that's what there are well-meaning companies and people in these collectives, but there are also not well-meaning people, which Gary knows better than both of us do, Jason. And the fact is there are now schools that have multiple collectives that are competing with each other.
Right.
That's
right.
And
it's not bad enough. You're dealing with a set of boosters. You're dealing with competing boosters.
Well, let me tell you how clear you are there, Jeff. I mean, it's really clear. One of the people that I was talking to, and I guess I can't give names, can't do all that. Mm-hmm. He was at a school, and within their collective, they had 500,000, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, today's day, that's not a lot of money. You know, that's going to one player, right? And so
it's part of one player.
And not even your best player.
And what he ended up doing was he ended up going to another place. But the reason why he wanted to go to another place, because the school he was in a conference that was dissolving, right? But the conference, understand, the school he was in had 500,000, but they were going to a conference, meaning the Big 12, mm-hmm. that the minimum was 2 million in the collective. Okay. And so with that,
the conference has a minimum collective amount?
Well, they don't, it's not stated.
Okay.
But in the schools, many of the schools.
It was one of those unspoken rules that, like, you're not a part, rules, you're not right. a part of the club if you don't have all the stuff to be in the club.
Right, okay. Right. And now think about that. I mean, you know, the one school had 500,000 in the collective. And now here's another thing you need to know about the collective. You got to raise that as a coach. You know, it's not just only on the administration. You got to help raise that. So coaches are doing another job trying to get money for these players. So they're not focusing on what they were meant to do. They're focusing on the wrong things. So if we're at a point right now that I don't know where I, and like you said, Jason, I think the collective is here to stay because it's so many people that are involved to help in the process of the money. See, they don't have, see, schools may not be able to give that kind of money, what they're asking
Look,
for,
Jeff,
but the outsiders can. So they got to get these people involved.
Jeff's the lawyer, but I would think that if you try to get rid of the collectives, they would go to court and say that you don't have a right to restrict how I use my money. Like I would think that you've opened Pandora's box there, and how to fix that is not very clear or easy.
I don't know how powerful the collective remains, though, if you take out the portal aspect, if you take out the constant transfer. I think that I don't think anything will control the situation completely, but I think it at least starts, because now what you're seeing, and I can't. When I heard this, and it involves my own alma mater, I squirmed at what I'm about to say. And I immediately thought of you. The reason that we wanted to have you on is I immediately thought of you as Michigan won a national championship last year. Great. This year they're struggling because they have no quarterback. And a well-known person, the guy who runs Barstool Sports, put out a tweet saying, basically, have no fear, alumni. I have $3 million to solve this problem next year. As a coach, I know that it's legal that he can do these things. As a coach, does it make you squirm at all that millionaires can just go out and say, by the way, next year, I have enough power. I'm going to go get you a shooter.
Or are you relieved?
I'm going to go get you a quarterback.
Or are you relieved you have that and can just go get the other players now?
No, because I want fairness. As much as I would like my alma mater to do better than other alma maters, I want it done fairly. I don't want this because this is not competition. And by the way, this doesn't teach young men and young women what the real world is like.
Yes, what the real world is like. And see, what you just said there, Jeff, is a key factor, because what's going on today is a short-term process. Mm-hmm. You know, they're getting this money, they're having it for this short period of time. Then once it's over, you think they're going to give them more money to continue their lives? And if they don't get an education, how they gonna get more money to continue their life? So they're running. I mean, they're moving down the wrong road. And I don't know what they're gonna do about it. Now, if you sit and think about it, the collective came into existence because of the NIL. The NIL was only given money to certain people. You know, if you weren't a star in the whole process, you weren't gonna be able to get an NIL. Mm-hmm. But they found that, hey, I got a whole front line that's not getting a penny, and I got a block for this NIL guy that's not giving us a penny. So now what are we going to do? Okay. They said, well, we better come up with something so they can get something to feel compensated. And now the compensation has then grown to a level that's unbelievable, because they're saying, I'm the best right tackle in America. So now you got to give me, you know, what the NIL guy get.
Wait, Jason, before you go, because now I have to follow up on something, because we have had running backs on the show who said that if they were still in school when this would happen, they would have whoever the star is, they'd go sit down with the star. The captains would go sit in the star and say, hey, you have to divvy this money.
Oh, that was Leroy, wasn't it?
No, it wasn't. It was Jamie Morris.
Oh, Jamie Morris. Okay.
And as well-meaning as that was, there's no way that's going to happen. So it does lead to just one other question that I have, and then Jason has one, is this also creating resentment and harming the culture within the locker room?
Well, you just said it, culture. Because when you made that comment earlier, what's happening to our culture, that's exactly what's happening. And it's a situation where that the coach has no control over anymore. And so you're right. You're exactly right.
I did want to ask you one thing kind of unrelated to all of this, but another kind of threat to the integrity of the sport. A lot of questions last year about Temple's basketball program with gambling allegations. One of the players went and transferred to another school, was just dismissed from that school. I mean, you watch the games and you'll see a FanDuel commercial as the lead-in to the game.
Yes.
And then you'll have players getting text messages and tweets from people saying they cost them money on their prop bet.
And you've
got coaches and commentators now who are aware of the spreads. You know, you're watching the game and
coaches are getting yelled at.
Well, they joked the other night in the game that about, oh, well, Al Michaels is eating dinner in a restaurant, but he would say that some people are interested in the score of this game because everybody knows one score would change the line. Can you talk about the threat that gambling has right now to coaches, athletes, and this culture as well?
And it's another vice on top of a vice, if you get what I'm saying, all the things that's happening in our sport. And the problem is, once you let that vice in, you can't control it. And see, it's at the beginning stages right now, but it's going to grow and it's going to be a problem. You know, you go back in history, you know, all the games that were fixed and all the things that happened in the different sports. How do we know that's not happening today?
People are looking back at Temple's games for the last 2 years. And looking at, you know, shooter missing the front end of a 1-1 where they lose and don't. Like, that's what happens when the allegations start, is everybody gets tainted with this and everybody is subject to scrutiny going back retrospectively.
Well, see, but I hate to say this, eventually they're going to have to take this sport and say it's a professional sport. That's what they're going to have to do. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we want to stay with the title amateur, but that's not clicking. And it's really causing a lot of think about the Olympics. They stay with amateurism for a long time. And then all of a sudden they just said, hey, we can't compete unless we get professionals. And so once that happened, now we can compete again. So they want to continue to compete.
That's what drives people like Jeff from the sport, though. Jeff loves the amateurism of it.
Right.
I don't know. I kind of straddle it. I mean, I'm annoyed by the professional side of it, but I'd rather there be control so I can enjoy the games. But I never looked at them amateurs or pros. I looked at them as athletes. But I've learned, I mean, Jeff, you can speak for yourself, but the amateur side of it is something that means a lot to you.
It's not necessarily not paying them, because I do think that there's money for them to be paid, and I think that they deserve it. I think it's a question of differentiating it from professional sports.
Right.
And I think that, and not losing sight of the value of an education, because people keep, there are 100 student athletes on a football team, just for example. 10 on a really good team are going to make a living out of it. And they're going to make a living of the people that I knew from when I went to college who were in the NFL. The average lifespan of a career of an NFL player was 3.5 years.
Yeah.
And so they're not prepared if they're not in the classroom. We're all learning to be adults in college. We're not just there for learning a profession.
I'm still learning how to be an adult, and I'm 45
right
now.
And so I think these things are incredibly important. And Coach Waters, one of the things is, you know, we got to know you because of a book that you wrote that becomes more and more relevant with each passing day in amateur sports or college sports. And you had told us someday there's going to be a sequel to this.
When is
it coming? Because we need it now, more than ever.
And I hate to move on.
He probably has to update it every day or something like that at this point.
Yeah, you do. And that's what I'm doing to it. I got a new book coming out, and I think the launch date is November 1st, and it's titled Coaching Millennials from a Character Perspective.
Yeah, we need that book.
Now, see, when you say millennials, you know, millennial is becoming outdated because that's a little, but what you need to know is the generations today, Z, X, they're all part of millennials. So they're related. So when you talk in regards to millennials, you're really talking about what's happening today. And so how much is character needed in this group or this generation? A great deal of character. And that's why I talk about it. And it was really fun doing it, because I was talking about my team, and because I was at Rutgers, and that's when I had millennials and the whole thing, and how they transpired, whatever happened during that time, but how we had to help them, and how social media and technology came into existence, and how it created all these things that's happening today. And when you think about it, you think about the portal, the NIL, that's all connected. And now we gotta work through it. We gotta do better at it. And I even give them at the end of the book what they should do to better themselves in regards to this.
That book is less than 2 weeks away.
Yeah, it's called Coaching Millennials from a Character Perspective.
I would think that character. Go ahead, Jeff.
When we're done reading this book, we hope to have you back again so that we can talk about this next chapter in your chapter of books.
I would think that character becomes more critical when dealing with some challenging times like this. You know, character is what, when everybody's being offered a handout, character is what differentiates you between the next person, what you do with that handout, whether you take it, how you move forward, how you react after you get it. Does it go to your head, or does it, I think character is what's going to differentiate people going forward.
And that's with all the things we're dealing with. Think about it. The NIL, the portal, all that. The character portion of it is what's going to make these people do the right things.
Wow.
Okay. And when you think about integrity, you know what it actually means? Doing the right thing because it's the right thing to do. Are we doing that in our society today? No, we're not.
You're asking me that 10 days before an election? No, definitely not. Coach, we could talk to you for hours about this. When the new book comes out, we will have to get our hands on it and get you back on to continue this conversation. We always appreciate giving us the time.
Hey, it's great talking to you guys. You are wonderful. So, hey, have a great, great day. I got to get to a meeting, but I just want to let you know that it was a great time being with you.
Thanks, Coach.
Always our honor.
Yes.
This is such an important discussion for young men and young women as they go through a process that has no rules or rules that are changing from day to day. But my fear is because, again, this falls in the lap of the NCAA.
They're going to screw it up.
And the leaders, and I'm using that in air quotes, that have screwed this up for now decades. I mean, the O'Bannon case should have been the wake-up call when it was filed. It shouldn't have been, let's just ignore this.
Let's just hope it doesn't
hope it goes
courts.
Away.
Yeah.
Right? And it didn't. But here's my big concern, and, you know, this is what came out of Jay leaving Villanova and now Tony Bennett leaving. And I didn't even realize that, you know, with what Coach Water was talking about is that some coaches saw this and were getting out a while ago, but now it's more vocal that this is the reason they're getting out, is that we're not going to have those coaches. You are not going to have Mike Krzyzewski's of the world that are going to stick around for 25, 30 years, because they're just going to get burned out from this.
Burn out, or they'll get a better offer.
Or they'll go to the pros where at least it's more controlled.
You saw that, like, with coaches leaving to go to the pros because they didn't want to have to deal with the booster situation.
Right. And so that's what's going to, I think, happen more and more. Now, there's only so many jobs in the pros, but you wonder whether or not this creates other leagues, whether or not they go and coach abroad, but just to get out of this craziness if the craziness isn't controlled.
Why don't we leave it there? The World Series starts tonight. I want you to pray for those going to the game, because this is going to be the traffic tonight.
And so I gave you the perfect segue to go into the beginning of the professional season, and you went to the World Series.
Because it's the World Series.
How did you miss that? Oh. I don't often make a good segue.
Are you big?
But okay, since we're going to go there. Jason, you've decided to turn left when everybody else was looking right. So we're going to go there now. So with the World Series, I don't like either one of these teams. Neither do you.
No.
But I do have to, and there are times where if my teams or my rooting interests are no longer there, I won't watch.
You're watching.
This is something that, you know, you're the ratings guy.
Gonna be huge ratings.
This could be the highest rated World Series.
They're gonna have to be huge ratings. People aren't gonna be able to afford to get in the stadium.
Well, okay. So you want to talk about ticket prices? I want to talk about players. But go ahead. You get your ticket prices out of the way.
No, I'm just saying it's like $1,200 get in price. It's down to $950 for Dodger Stadium. Average price is around $3,500. My thing is, you better have your tank filled, because you're going to sit in traffic for a while. This is what the traffic is.
I hate to tell you, Los Angelinos already know that.
But listen to this.
They're aware of traffic in LA. It doesn't get any worse because the World Series is there.
Yankees Dodgers at Dodger Stadium, Lakers Suns at Crypto, USC Rutgers at the Coliseum, a concert at the Intuit Dome. You're not going to be able to move in California tonight. But let's talk about the players. You've got the biggest names.
You're such a New Jersey boy.
Why?
Because like, if there's anybody listening on the West Coast,
yeah,
they're sitting there going, we don't move anyway.
Well, okay,
we're in gridlock traffic. There's a reason that people from LA come late and leave early. It's because of traffic.
Because they don't try.
Not because they're going surfing. I mean, and by the way, going to a Yankee game, not much better. At least they have better mass transportation. But if you've ever tried parking near Yankee Stadium, not fun.
This is the 12th World Series matchup between the Yankees and Dodgers, most common postseason matchup of all time. It's the fifth World Series matchup in wild card era between teams with the best record in each league. And it's the first World Series matchup in which 50 home run hitters square off. You tell me, I kind of feel Dodgers, but I have no idea.
So what I heard from all your statistics, I'm sorry, is blah, 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 blah. Here's what people are excited about. Shohei Ohtani.
Aaron Judge.
And Mookie Betts.
Uh-huh.
And Freddie Freeman. And Clayton Kershaw on one side. And you have Aaron Judge.
Not Kershaw.
And Giancarlo Stanton. And you know, a plethora
Soto,
of...
Juan Soto.
Juan Soto.
Garrett Cole. I mean, you got the big names.
You have potentially between 10 and 20% of the rosters that could be in the Hall of Fame.
It's pretty amazing.
You have stars among stars. And if they perform, I mean, even like look at Stanton. Stanton's come out of nowhere. Not that he was a bad player, but he's now put himself in position to, if he has another round like he's at, to actually be in consideration for being a Hall of Famer.
I know you
Juan
hate
Soto's on that path at some point. Aaron Judge is already close. Shohei Ohtani could probably sneeze and never play again, and he'll be in not because of his statistics, but what he's done. Mookie Betts is there. Freddie Freeman's on his way. That I can't say the same about the pitching. And with Kershaw, is Kershaw on the roster or he's not?
I don't think so.
Wow.
But I don't know.
And so if you want to take this back to East Coast baseball around us and how it matters.
Their pitching matchups are Flaherty, Yamamoto, Walker Buehler, and Johnny Holstaff versus Cole, Rodon, Schmidt, and Gill.
Yeah, it's not the greatest starting pitching staffs, but if you watched how the Dodgers got here, the Dodgers didn't get here with a bunch of starting pitchers.
No, they got here hitting and being patient.
And doesn't it make you just pull your hair out? That
the whole time,
the
I've been
Phillies,
texting you about
the
it.
The Phillies had the best pitching staff and starting pitching staff in baseball, and it didn't matter. And by the way, they pitched to what you would expect them to pitch.
I'm going to do something you don't like, and I'm telling you I'm doing something you don't like. We've only got 5 minutes left, and there's a lot I want to hit still. So I
want
to
talk soccer?
No, I want to do a whip around real fast. And
why?
Because there's a bunch to say. Okay, Fernando Valenzuela passed away.
That's important.
Very sad. I watched the 30 for 30 on him last night. Very sad.
It always amazes me because this week I went around and every time I would say Fernando Valenzuela, they're like, younger people go, who?
Oh,
like Fernando Mania
was huge
when he came into the major leagues.
I forgot he pitched for the Phillies.
Yeah, well, at that point,
at the end of his career.
Mattered. Okay, so did Pedro Martinez. Yeah. It seems to be like the last stop for a lot of pitchers.
We get the broken down.
Fernando was game changing, not just in the way he pitched and the fact that he didn't look at the catcher as he was pitching. There were players from other countries, but he opened the door to a lot of pitchers and players coming from other countries. He normalized it in a way and glorified it. And he was so important to the game of baseball beyond just his pitching.
All right, on the ice, Flyers have lost 6 in a row, but Michkov is as advertised.
Boy, there's a whip around.
We're going all of them.
We went straight from World Series to 1-5.
We're hitting
hockey.
All the major sports right now. So
it's going to be hard. You know, I actually before the season bought in. I really thought that this Flyers team was going to have something special happen with the mix of really exciting young players.
Their defense and
goaltending
isn't good enough yet.
Yeah, and look, we're only 6-7 games into the season, so there's still time, and they're young, and it's going to take them time to work. But you are right, Michkov is the real deal, and that's what you know. That's what happens when you're a bad team. You need that. You know, the Chicago had Bedard, and before that, there was McDavid with the Oilers, and it takes time.
And we've got a guy. Which is cool.
Yeah.
We also have two guys in basketball. You went down there the other night to watch the Sixers get blown out.
Those guys in the sweats, in the sweatsuits?
Paul George and Joel Embiid were not on the court. They will miss the first three games, it looks like.
I can tell you that was the least exciting opening night of a sporting event in Philadelphia in decades.
Your concern level. Because we were concerned going into the season.
I wasn't concerned. I told you.
Yeah, I know you've turned off your emotion. I understand.
No, well, no, it's more
I want to be able to
I,
do
I
that.
I told you it did not matter how much money they paid Paul George to come here. This team was never going to be better than a second round team. There is no evidence that this team's going to be better than a second round team. And it's for the same reasons, no matter what you signed and what you didn't, because Paul George is broken down at this point. His body has failed him many times, and you just put another albatross around your neck because Joel Embiid is here, and Joel Embiid has told everybody, I'm not playing if I have to play on back-to-back nights.
That didn't go over well with people.
Okay. Not only did it not go over well, there's now an investigation into whether or not. I mean,
talk about an exciting way to start the season.
The NBA is now investigating. I'm going to translate this. Whether Joel Embiid has heart. You realize that? They're investigating whether or not he wants to play basketball.
I think that's a tough place to be in. Last, before we go, Eagles beat the Giants.
You're getting off of that? Yep. We do not need to talk about Eagles.
Yes, we do. Eagles. They beat the Giants last week.
Let's go back and finish. We're not going to finish because it's going to be a year-long people screaming. But I want you to know, I've never been at a Sixers game where the seats were empty at the end of the third quarter.
Yeah.
Let alone on opening night.
Yeah, you told me that. And that, look, if I were the Sixers brass, I'd be concerned because they're making
But they're going to get a new stadium in 7 years.
Yeah, it got introduced the other day. Any final thoughts before we go, Jeff?
I almost kept the Eagles out of your mouth for an entire episode. That's all you need to know.
They got the Bengals this week. Thanks so much for joining us this week. Make sure to join us next Friday night to help you start your weekend in style. Have a great one. We'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
Operating engineers are the men and women that move mountains. And the Engineers Labor Employer Cooperative, ELEC, puts them to work. They create opportunities for the men, women, and union signatory contractors of Local 825, repaving our roads, keeping our homes bright and warm, and even building our favorite team stadium. We understand infrastructure. That's why ELEC and Local 825 are ready to get to work.